You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network at seavillepodcast.com. Lectures, radio shows, and more are available on demand at seavillepodcast.com. Now available through email. Sign up on our homepage. I'm Dan Gould. Dr. Robin A. Felder, UVA Professor of Pathology and Associate Director of Clinical Chemistry, talked about an important transition about to occur through the use of mobile technologies, sensors, and computers. With this new technology, we can transform the medical system of today into the wellness system of tomorrow. The hospital-at-home model will convert the average bathroom into a wellness diagnostic center and the bed into a sleep monitor. Dr. Felder spoke on Monday, March 12, 2012, as a part of the Charlottesville Senior Center's All Things Digital series. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. Here's Dr. Felder.
Today I'm going to go through a technology spectrum. Usually there's so much technology today you can't cover it all. So what I try to do is focus in on just the wellness piece, because the health system is so broken, as many of you probably know, that we need some kind of transformation. I've been interested in technology ever since I was born, I think. My father was an engineer for the Army, and he couldn't tell us what he was doing. A lot of top secret work, mostly shoulder-fired missiles or spy satellites from space and that sort of thing. I think I probably picked up those genes and kept on going with it. I've been at the University of Virginia for 28 years and run essentially two different programs, one in basic research trying to solve high blood pressure, and I'll even weave that in here today, and the rest of it's in automation and robotics, and hence I give lectures pretty much worldwide on automation and transformation of the world through robotics. So this is actually a picture from 1924 radio news that was predicting exactly what I'm going to tell you about today. Here's a doctor using it's on the other side of this video radio, which obviously didn't exist. In the 20s, we had Atwater Kents, and there wasn't much there but tubes and an AM dial. But there's a child with some kind of affliction being visited by their telemedicine doctor, and the family's there observing the interaction, probably some kind of graphical output there for pulse or whatever. So even back in 1924, we predicted all of this, and the technologies are here today. So what is wellness? Because we're trying to move from a health system that essentially fixes broken people is to a health system that gets to you before you're sick and tries to forestall or avoid sickness altogether. So we want wellness. It's a state of complete physical and mental and social well-being. Health really results from positive perspectives and positive lifestyle choices. And technology can provide all sorts of information that can push you in a wellness state. As humans, but particularly as Americans, we don't take care of our health. The proliferation of McDonald's and Hardee's and all of that is a prime example of the kind of things we're doing to ourselves. And I saw the movie Super Size Me recently, and I was just absolutely, we are not a healthy society. So how can we avoid that? Well, one, we need to start looking at people as whole beings. As a clinical chemist, I get a tube of blood from one of you, and it comes into the lab, and I'm trying to tell you everything about your health from a snapshot of blood and only measuring a few substances. Well, there's a few hundred billion substances in there, and they're changing every moment of the day. And not only that, every organ system in your body is doing something different, and yet you're only getting a tube of blood. So how can we look at people holistically using technology? And how can we simply create, and this is something we came up with in our lab, we essentially measure your physical well-being, your social well-being, and your cognitive well-being through a variety of systems, and we give you a score of 1 out of 10. And then if any of those are out of kilter, and I'm going to overlay in the future colors on there, so if there's a red denotes bad, and green is good, and yellow in between. So with just a glimpse, you or your caregiver or your doctor can tell if you're out of balance and how you're out of balance, and then begin drilling down to find out exactly what's not right. So wellness is feeling well, achieving wellness strategies, and then there's also denial and retraining, because not everybody stays on the right track. So what we need is essentially happiness for dummies, which is something we all could learn something new every day. So wellness support is a growing need for new sources of data and data interpretation, because interpreting health information, as you know, is wildly complex and getting more complex by the moment. Integration of multiple diagnostic sources, because it's coming in from your doctor, your radiologist, the molecular information, what you need for pharmacy, and how your lifestyle is impinging on your health. And that's something we often don't get asked about by our doctors, and doctors don't really appreciate how much lifestyle can influence your health. We need to integrate your health record, which your physician has, which now there's the wellness record, all the things that your doctor doesn't know about you. How well do you sleep? What is your diet on a minute-to-minute basis? How well are you socially integrating? So the wellness record is something that would take you an enormous amount of time to fill in. Well, we were thinking, why not just have it self-populate? Just as you live in your home, it's taking recordings of you and your well-being and populating a wellness record, so when somebody looks in there to see something about you, all that information is present. And then we need ongoing information about supporting and maintaining healthy lifestyles, because as you age, your diet should change, your metabolism certainly does, so you probably shouldn't stick to the same kinds of activities and diets you had as a youth. That should be evolving along with your body. So wellness support is essentially food coaching, exercise rewards, consequence reporting, consequence forecasting, what's going to happen in the future as a consequence of what you're doing right now. And certainly the bathroom scale is a classic, one of the simplest tools you can use. There's this also thing we need to overcome vicarious goal fulfillment or exhaustion of self-control. And that's a psychiatric term that if you take somebody who's super healthy, let's say they're a marathoner, and you give them a choice between a salad and a chocolate sundae, they'll almost always pick the chocolate sundae. And it's counterintuitive. If they're a marathoner, you'd think they'd always pick the salad. What it is they feel that they've been so good for so long that given a choice, I'm going to take the bad one to reward myself for being so good. So that is another problem. Even the best people on the straightest and narrowest path want to veer. As humans, we want to go off track every now and then just so we can get back on again. So home health information technology is essentially integrating all those multiple information sources, wellness, socialization, and medical, and then you essentially take, this is going to be classic telemedicine in the future, and it exists in many locations now. That information is sent up to the computer in the sky where your physician or maybe just a caregiver who's knowledgeable interprets it, creates a report, and feeds back to you so you can complete that loop and stay healthy. Well, that's also a new revenue source for medical cloud interpretations and coaching. So not only interpreting that enormous amount of data, but then saying what kinds of things should you do. But we have a problem. How are we going to feed back to people who, instead of just a piece of paper, it says your blood pressure is too high? When we now are talking about socialization and cognitive issues, how are we going to report that in a way that's understandable and actionable? And so I'll get to some of that in a moment. So here's an example. Salt is the number one killer in our diet in the world. This is a great picture that I was interviewed for Vogue, and they came up with this picture to talk about the deleterious effects of salt. So in my basic research side, I study why salt is bad for you, what's wrong with people who can't handle salt, what's right with people who can, and I'll shorten 30 years of research into a few sentences. What we found out is that salt really isn't bad for everybody. Some people, 20%, really need salt. If they don't eat enough salt, their blood pressure actually goes up, completely counterintuitively. There are people whose salt is very, very bad for them. Their blood pressure goes up 10% after a high salt meal, and they're going to have strokes, blindness, kidney failure, and heart attacks. And there is absolutely everything in between. So as individuals, we need a personal amount of salt, and you should, as you eat salt during the day, you should keep track of it so find out where you've reached your limit, your personal limit. So that's the short story. Getting that information to individuals is difficult. So what we've done is from the lab, we've spun out a company, a small pharmaceutical company here in Charlottesville called Hypogen. And we have a genetic test and another kind of test to test your genetic predisposition for deleterious effects of salt. You can usually tell if your parents had high blood pressure. then chances are you're going to have it, but it's carried down in the genes. We also have a proprietary set of algorithms that determines where on the SALT curve you are. And it's essentially the first example of a molecular diagnostic test for a chronic disease. You've always heard of molecular tests, well, things like Huntington's, chorea, those are mutations that you can test, but you can't usually test for chronic disease. But we found the right genes to be able to do that. So bringing this same picture back again, what you would do is you'd go to your physician and by a family history or two positive high blood pressure readings, you'll now be interpreted as having pre-hypertension or hypertension. But then you get the genetic test to make sure it's correct, because you only have a 30% chance of getting an accurate blood pressure reading in a doctor's office. It's hard to believe, but two out of three chances you'll get the wrong reading. So once the genetic test and you get a positive result, then aha, either you're going to have high blood pressure, or if you have it now, this is the reason you have it. And then there's a follow-on test that we've developed, which is absolutely definitive and gives you a specific number for you. And then you can make dietary recommendations, but you can be helped using a SALT app on your phone that every time you shop in the grocery store or open a package at home, you point the phone at the barcode. It'll determine the nutritional information there by going up to the cloud and downloading it. And then on your screen, it'll be red, yellow, or green. You can eat this. Maybe you should eat this, or you should definitely avoid it. But it'll also add up how much salt you're eating. So by the when you've reached your limit, your phone will call you and say, you've reached your daily limit. Stop the salt. So that's kind of an example of how technology, molecular diagnostics can all work together to put you on the right path and avoid stroke, blindness, kidney failure, and heart attacks. Not a bad payoff for doing the right thing. So wellness technologies can work in other areas as well. We just talked about nutrition, making sure you have enough exercise, the biometrics, stress reduction, mood enhancement, pain reduction, sleep improvement, and health and wellness monitoring. And I'll be showing you examples of various of these. One example I couldn't show you, because I was buying them at Best Buy, it was a simple bracelet. It has spring-loaded, and you just put it on your wrist. And we could go in the shower, you sleep with it, and it stays with you. And just plug it into your cell phone once a week, and it would upload all the data about your walking steps and that sort of thing, but also your sleep stages. It would actually monitor the quality of sleep you were getting. So it knew when you went to bed, when you went to get up in the morning. But more importantly, your wrist jiggles at night during certain phases of your sleep, and at other times it doesn't. So it measures all of that. It's called actigraphy. And you could get sleep assessment and essentially activity out of a little simple bracelet. Well, they kept breaking. I went through three of them at Best Buy. And finally, I got a letter from the company saying, we're taking them off the market. We've got electronics problems, so technology. But just know those kinds of things are that close to being right with you 24/7 without too much trouble. There's also going to be new communication paradigms. We all know that the iPad is ubiquitous, and they're getting to be waterproof, so you can actually take them in the shower with you. Why you'd want to do that, I haven't quite figured out yet. But doctors at UVA and elsewhere are bringing up images of your x-rays and MRIs, doing it on their cell phone. You know, right between the sixth and seventh hole on the golf course, they can do a diagnosis and avoid having to, they can play another round without having to go into the hospital. But embedded wellness sensors is what we're interested in, things that are part of your home so you don't have to actually buy it. It comes installed in every home. You instrument essentially common fixtures. It's all wireless, so there's no need to run wires anywhere. Don't have to have an electrician. And you pull all the data together on the web and also interpret it. One of the simplest technologies is just a mat that if you're on it, it says you're on. If you're off of it, it's off. And they place this in front of the commode, and you can tell when people are using the bathroom or not. That technology is amazing in terms of determining how frequently, especially at night, people are using the restroom, which can be indicative of all kinds of things, urinary tract infection, enlarged prostate, just go down the list. Another thing I've seen is a sink with a mood ring in it. And so it essentially interprets, it's a way of communicating with you simply. In the morning, you're kind of most receptive in terms of wellness information. And if that ring turns green, it means you're having a good hair day and you're well. if it turns yellow or red, that it motivates you to find out what's wrong, and then you'll go to your interpretation station, and I'll show you one of those in a moment. And the mirror itself is going to be the place where you get all the communication, and I'll show you specific examples of that. Toothbrush is right here. There's a wireless toothbrush. I didn't show that one because that one is still not out in the market yet. But as you brush your teeth, it's sampling your saliva, and it's taking chemical readings from your saliva so that you get another data source because you use your toothbrush every day. So real-time coaching. In this case, here's a mirror that has a video embedded in the mirror, and children who are learning to brush their teeth can, if they're doing it wrong, because the toothbrush can tell you're doing it wrong, the accelerometer is going this way instead of that way, and so that sends a signal to the mirror, and then a little video shows up, and it gives real-time coaching to the child to say, do it this way, and then the child gets rewarded for proper toothbrushing. So there's one example. You can also supply medically approved content, and the important thing, it's got to be tailored for the individual. You go to WebMD, it drives me crazy, and they have one-size-fits-all information on health. You know, 12 things you can do to make yourself feel better. It's just also like Good Housekeeping. All those articles are so watered down and generic that they really don't speak to you as an individual. Here's another health monitoring station in the house. Essentially, you have a toilet, and this exists. The Matsushita company in Japan created this. Measures body temperature, pulse, blood pressure, and body fat percentage. It also measures urine protein and glucose and sends that information to your home data network and then on to your healthcare provider. So it's, again, something you can't avoid, and it's going to be measuring stuff on you on a continuous basis. Well, semi-continuous. Now, watching this technology evolve in our center for at least, what was it, about 14 years, I ran the Medical Automation Research Center. It's a group of 36 physicians, nurses, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, software designers. We had essentially a really varied, multidisciplinary group just inventing all day long. We spun out 9 companies out of the University of Virginia, of which I think 6 are still in Charlottesville. Some of you may have seen Medical Automation Systems, WellAware Systems, Hypogen. So I like that inventing, creating, and translating stuff. So part of this was our in-home health monitoring project. And what we did is created a model where the impact of chronic disease is delayed or avoided. It provides the opportunity for medical information before you have a crisis. And then we want to minimize the impact of health on the healthcare system and potentially delay the admittance to a nursing home and reduce the cost of healthcare overall. We started out with some very simple sensor technologies and embedded them in a home over on Grove Street. It was a nurse that was willingly instrumented. The home was instrumented. And what he did is kept a log of his daily activities, and we measured the sensors from the lab at UVA, because it was sent over to us, and we correlated the two and published a paper saying that the sensors really did report what this person was doing, because that's important not to get erroneous information. The next thing we did is expanded it to do a group of 6 individuals, and then we went to 24. And then by the time we got to 40 people, we moved it to Sioux Falls, South Dakota through connections, but we wanted to be able to really remote monitor from a great distance. And so we did that and published that paper, and so then we launched the company. And basically what it is it's a series of sensors, and the company's name is now called WellAware Systems, and it moved from Charlottesville to Richmond because it's about 45 people in the company. And it has unobtrusive sensors for highly accurate monitoring of your wellness. These devices here are essentially proximity monitors. They just like a light activation sensor outside your house. Somebody walks by and the light goes on. Exactly the same technology, except it has a little light on it, and you know it's active by the light, but we know it's active because we send data to it, and it sends it back continuously, because if it goes bad, that's a problem, if somebody goes off the radar screen. We have, these are floor monitors, and you take the box and sit it on the floor and turn it on, and you've just instrumented the entire floor in that room. And as you walk across the floor, it measures footsteps. You say, now what could you learn from footsteps? Well, if you're asymmetric, you've had a hip replacement, and you're healing, which is an enormously long-term process, that it looks at your asymmetry, and then over days, weeks, months, it sees that you're getting more and more and more symmetric. So you're on the normal healing curve. It could be the opposite. You could be getting asymmetric, and it could be indicative of osteoarthritis or some problems with your hips. when somebody falls, it creates a huge seismic event on our sensors, and we get this big jump on it. But it's important. We did a lot of fall research to see the different kinds of falls that people do. Now, this has never been published because you can't get any institution to approve of fall research because of the potential risk to the person falling. You know, who's going to sign up for a fall? You're going to fall and hit your head, you know. So we went down to the crash test folks and got dummies, and we'd roll them out of bed, and we'd push them out of chairs, and, you know, we did everything we could and catalog the falls. And it's amazing. When you have a concussive fall, you always hit a knee, hip, shoulder, head. And we saw those four bumps when somebody had a concussive fall. Or if somebody just stumbled and then continued walking, that's an important event because it shows if that happens frequently enough, then caregivers can go in and get rid of the area rugs and get rid of those big floppy slippers and give you something more form-fitting. So you can avoid falls by just observing how frequently stumbles occur. So we haven't even begun to exhaust the amount of data that we can get out of this system. We also can get mood, because people that are depressed walk slowly and more purposely than people who are happy. You get more spring in your step, I guess. And if we see springy steps, we know you're actually having a good mood day. And then we had another system here. This is a long rubber mat, and you simply sew that into a mattress pad and put it on your bed. And just by sleeping in your bed, we could get your pulse and your breathing, and we could get every single heartbeat. And it was so sensitive that if you wear an overcoat and make the bed and throw a comforter on it and lay down, we could still measure your breathing and your pulse. So you couldn't avoid the measurement at any time. So what do you use this data for? Well, we aggregated it all together. So we gather the daily activities, then we have the data manager piece, which aggregates all that information, and then the care capture analysis and reporting engine essentially takes all of this, sends it up to the cloud, and the caregivers have to interpret it. Now, interpreting this kind of avalanche of data was a potential problem, so we had to find ways of showing that data, which I'll get to. But sleep monitoring was the one technology that every elder care facility wanted when we started deploying these systems. Sleep apnea affects more than 40 million people, and the testing market alone is $4 billion currently for just getting in a sleep lab in a hospital. So if we could monitor your sleep every night affordably, then we'll save the healthcare system $4 billion right there. So what it measures is sleep quality, your pulse and heart rate, and this is an example of the data. It's remarkable, every single heartbeat and every breath you're taking. Not only that, when we sewed two of those pads in there, we could tell if you're sleeping on your back or your stomach, because the breaths come differently when you sleep on your back and stomach. But also, if you have a restricted airway anywhere up here and you're trying to breathe, that's what apnea is, you're trying to suck in oxygen. If you're blocked up here and you try to breathe, your stomach actually goes in because you're pulling to try to pull that air in. If you have an open airway, as you breathe, everything expands. So we could easily see the difference between apnea and normal breathing. And then we could also see bed exit, because if you're not pulsing and breathing and you didn't set off the motion sensor, because if there's no breathing and pulsing and the motion sensor stays quiet, then you've died. But if you get up and it goes out, and you're walking across the room, we see that. So that's important because we saw how many times people get up in the middle of the night for disturbed sleep. And then also body temperature, just simply for fever. And then blood pressure is our holy grail in the future. This is the example of the data. It looks like an awful lot of data, but you can easily see a restless resident with lots of wake-ups and moving around the bed for somebody who's having a very peaceful night's sleep. Almost no movement at all. So that was we found that we could do simple filtering to get the important information, then we could dig deeper if we wanted to. So you essentially want this real-time assessment of participant health and status of well-being. This is important to know, to keep in mind, this is really real-time. This isn't telling your doctors and a week later, it's at the moment. We can drill down to specifics. We can automatically dispatch help. And this is an important thing. Right now, if you're in your home, being cared for by the outside world, the person that's coming is often overqualified because they have to be able to do everything. So you pay them a great deal of money. If you have automatic matching of the problem with the solution, you can, if somebody's not eating, you can send Meals on Wheels. If somebody isn't bathing, you can send an orderly kind of person to bathe. If somebody's having health issues, then you can match the health issue with the care provider. All that saves time and money. And then you can override to essentially dispatch downstream processes. Here's an example of the output. In this case, it's an elder care facility in Sioux Falls that we monitor. And there's a list of patient names followed by the care level that they're in, either assisted living or full-time care, where they're located. There's IDs that you can put in so somebody can find that room pretty quickly. But what's important is the next table, which shows all sorts of activities across the top and all sorts of colored spots, which either red, you've got a problem, yellow, it needs some attention sometime soon, and green, leave that resident alone. A lot of people in elder care facilities complain that they're always being bugged, somebody's knocking on the door all the time. Well, if you look at the kinds of things we're monitoring, it's bathing and nutrition and sleep and general hygiene and general activity level. And you can see that when it comes to, I think it's mobility, that most of these residents had mobility issues. They weren't moving around enough to be healthy. So that's a case of generating more activities for them. The nutrition was all green because they're in institutional care and they're getting three meals a day. So that's generally never going to light up in institutional care. So you can begin to interpret all of the information. And anytime there's a red spot, you can drill down with one-click trending, and you can see exactly what's happening to that resident for that particular event, whatever it may be. And we could actually monitor pain, particularly sleep is a very good time to monitor pain because people don't sleep well when they're in pain of some sort. And there were residents whose sleep index was slowly going down. They dispatched the nurse's aide to give a little bit more pain medication, and their sleep went right back to normal immediately. So this kind of feedback works well. Now, what does this cost and what does it save? That's always the question I get. So we actually did a study of 21 matched groups, two groups, 21 in each, and we monitored them for a period of 6 months, and we did not monitor the control group, and we found that the control group cost the institution about $70,000 roughly of care. Most of that's transport to medical facilities for a checkup. For an issue, where the monitored group was $17,000. So it's essentially a 64% reduction in the cost of care simply by doing monitoring. Yes.
So what made the difference in the cost of care? Was it the test involved?
Now, most of it was the fact that we avoided transporting individuals to care facilities. The number one item was that the frequency of bathroom visits was going up in residents, and they saw that. So what they did is, in the incidence, usually it's an indicator of urinary tract infection in elder care facilities. So the kitchen staff was alerted immediately, and they started pushing fluids, particularly acidic fluids, at all three meals. And then they saw that the bed visits went back down to normal. The sleeplessness went back to normal, and they avoided transports to the hospital to care, because urinary tract infection, you have to get antibiotics and all that sort of thing. So that was the number one, but there was a whole host of little things that they saved. And particularly with falls, because the falls, they were able to get to people before they progressed to concussive falls. Yes?
I think that you might note that in a nursing facility, they cannot prescribe. So that's why they have to take them by ambulance to the hospital
yes.
and back. And that's what the big cost is.
Yeah, that's the number.
It's not the giving of medical attention.
Yeah, it's, you're right. They don't have a medical facility on site per se. Yeah. So it's remarkable what you can save. What was really disturbing to us as we were doing the monitoring was we saw incidents. You plug the system in and it allows itself to train for 2 weeks so it knows that individual's habits so it can look for deviations from their norm. Well, during that 2 week training period, we were seeing falls. And you could see the concussive event, you could see a little movement, but you saw no rescue. And then 30 minutes later, you'd see a little bit more movement. And because of our institutional review board requirements, we were not allowed to intervene because we were supposed to be strictly monitoring. So we would sit there, and then 6, 7, 8 hours later, we'd finally see a flood of footsteps when they found the individual and were able to help them. So can you imagine that's what, and the issue that we always get another question, do you feel obtruded upon, do you feel watched, is this big brother watching me? Well, almost uniformly, these folks said, at my age, I just want to feel safe. And if I have a problem, I want somebody to find me and find me quickly. So that's the plus side of this thing, is it does make you feel safe. If you feel intruded upon, simply don't use it or just turn it off. And there's always, right by the front door, there was a big off switch. If anybody felt the least bit comfortable, they were welcome to just turn it off. So if all of that didn't look futuristic, I'm now going to show you the next generation of things. They're the simple health monitors, but simple is sometimes better, almost always is better. This is a scale for your bathroom, but it's got a handle on it so you can grab it to step on and step off so you won't fall. But while you're grabbing it, and it's got a pulse oximeter on there, it's getting your oxygen saturation and your pulse, and it's looking at the change in weight, body fat percentage. And those are important indicators. If your weight is falling rapidly, not a good idea. If it's going up slowly, then that's just heading into the wrong wellness direction. Here's an interesting device from PharmaTrust, a new company out of Canada. When you prescribe drugs to a patient, they don't always work. And sometimes you have to try another regimen and then another regimen. All that takes months of visiting your doctor, getting more blood tests or blood pressure checks, particularly hypertension. What PharmaTrust does is have an entire formulary for your issue built in a shoebox, which gets delivered in a bag. They plug it in, and you have a screen to talk to your physician. You use your telemonitoring system at home to do all your vital signs. And if the regimen isn't working, the doctor changes the dispensary to come up with another drug. And so right there, without visiting your pharmacy or your doctor, you can get the next regimen. And then if that doesn't work, the doctor can try combinations of things. So you do the entire round trip of trying to find the perfect drug right there in your home, and when you're done, goes back in the bag, gets shipped to another patient. So it's essentially a time saver for the hunt and peck of finding the right pharmaceutical. This is a underwear that measures blood pressure. Again, I'm in search of the holy grail that we can do blood pressure, because most people have a cuff at home and they don't use it. That's probably most people in this room, they don't use their blood pressure cuffs. This uses pulse wave velocity. The tissue impedance shows passing pulses, and the pulse timing is correlated with your relative pressure. So it's essentially continuous, and you can't avoid it, so unless you're a naturalist. Automated pharmaceuticals. For less than a penny a pill, you can essentially put this electronic thing in every pharmaceutical you take. What it does is it measures your pulse, your breathing, and your intestinal pH as it's passing through, and all that data is, since it's connected to the liquid in your body, the signal is sent through the liquid to a wristwatch, which then is wireless to get it up to the cloud. And this is interpretive data here. This is somebody's respiration and health trends over weeks. So just the pills themselves are instrumented. And it's amazing to me you can make it for less than a penny, but there you are. Philips Electronics, I think, bought Proteus Bio. Automated intestinal biopsies. We all know about colonoscopies. I'm not going to show you today, but there's a camera you can swallow and can take pictures of your intestinal tract down about as far as your belly button before the battery runs out. But we'd all like to avoid that this is an example of the camera one. If the camera sees something, then you go in for your biopsy, which is usually pretty invasive. Well, this Korean group has this camera pill that has intestinal Velcro, for lack of a better term. When it sees something of interest, it attaches to your intestine and hangs on there while your physician, watching on their cell phone on the eighth hole now, because they've got past the other one, they're watching and said, "Ooh, that looks like a polyp. Take a biopsy." The camera grabs some tissue, and then the whole thing gets collected later on, and it avoids a trip to the physician. So this is showing great promise in the future. We all know the eye is a window to your soul. Well, it's also a window to your health. At the University of California, South Carolina, I thought it was San Diego, there's a contact lens that has a spot that changes color based on the sugar in your tears, and that's directly correlated to your diabetes. So you have this device, you point at your lens, and it gives you your sugar level without having to stick your finger. So I thought, well, now that's heading in the right direction, but then you've got to carry this device around to measure your sugar. And also you have to put the contact lenses in. If you're not a lens wearer, then that's a problem. There's another lens company that's measuring intraocular pressure for people with glaucoma, so you can actually get real-time reporting and take the right drug. Use a strain gauge out of the University of Baltimore, Maryland and Baltimore. And this is the one that I've invented myself. I said, how can we improve on all of this? Well, in every corner of your eyelid, there is, all four corners, there's a lacrimal canaliculus, which is a drain for your tears. Because you wonder why you're blowing your nose while you're watching a sad movie, is simply because the tears have to go somewhere. The ones that aren't coming down your face, your eyelids, every time you blink, aspirates a microliter of tears into your nose, or more if you have more tears. So that's your drainage system for your tears. I said, well, why? It's a clean fluid. It's going through this channel continuously. Why do I put an analyzer in there and just measure it? So this is the analyzer that we invented, and it actually sits in the little thing in the corner of your eyelid. It doesn't touch your eye at all, just your eyelid. And it, in real time, can measure your sugar in your tears. And so how it would work is it essentially would communicate with your cell phone directly, because you can put a small antenna in there, and then it would give you alerts for high or low glucose concentrations. So you're walking along, your cell phone calls you and says, you're going to have a diabetic crisis in about 20 minutes, you need so many milligrams of insulin. So then you don't have that problem. You could do trend analysis, and then you could also do food coaching for children, because if they're planning on eating something that's really bad for them, they could get the camera to take a picture of it, send it off to the food coach, who would say, based on your last sugar levels, stay away from it, or that's okay. So you could do it in that way, but then that would require somebody, the coach, to be ready to go, unless we get computers to interpret what they see in the food and come up with a response, which I'm probably not far away from that anyway. So imagine your eye now. Also, I like the fact that it's minimally invasive. You don't have to stick it in your peritoneum like all those glucose sensors, which have chance for infection. There's a million people in the United States that have their little channels plugged because they have dry eye after LASIK surgery or just aging. And so those plugs just back up your tears and keep your eyes moist. So if there's a million people walking around with them already, happily, then why not instrument it? And why stop at glucose? Why not stress markers? Why not get breathing and pulse and everything else? So it goes on and on. So let's talk, shift gears here a little bit, the receptivity part. Essentially presenting health and wellness to a patient, because getting data is good, but it's all about what you do with it. Determining what information is too much information. We have to tailor this to be at a low roar. And optimizing the time for that wellness information, the well-formation, to be presented to you. And I think the bathroom, and I think in the morning, is probably most people's most receptive time. Augmented reality is essentially taking a video scene and superimposing on it additional information. Okay, so there's an example of a augmented reality scene. This guy's looking at himself in the mirror, and he's holding his arm up like this, and normally he would just see a reflection of his arm. But the computer is projecting his bone structure on his arm. Now, how did the computer know his bone structure? Well, from the last x-ray he had 6 months or 5 years ago. And if you have a pain in your arm and you can't really place it, you just say it's around here, then quickly your mirror could show you where the potential source of pain is in your arm. So suddenly you're enlightened because you know exactly where the pain issues are. If you do a knee joint assessment in front of your computer screen at home from something you can get online today, you can get a better assessment of exactly what's wrong with your knee joint than you can get in a doctor's office. They've tested in a controlled study that this self-assessed knee issue, it makes you bend your knees in about 50 different ways and record pain thresholds, and it comes up with an exact ACL tear or anything. So augmented reality in the home can be as or better than your physician's office visit. So we can dig down a little deeper. So here, this individual has intestinal pain, but can't differentiate that from muscular pain, or maybe I've got a headache and it somehow. So again, you can get a complete anatomy lesson. Now that may be TMI for, even though I'm in health, if I see white sneakers and the color red, I go comatose every time. So I'm going to tune mine down and say, well, the system would know already that I fainted 3 times last when I had my blood taken, so it's going to give me a different augmented reality than everybody else. Robotic reality. I mean, if you are failing or simply want a helper around the house, we're going to need assistance to essentially care for ourselves. The aging population is the tsunami from hell without enough people to provide care. So I always try to keep a an eye on the service end of things. Basically what this robot does with it, it's got batteries, completely autonomous. It walks across the floor. It stands on one leg. It stretches out its arms. It does all kinds of Tai Chi kinds of movements without so much as a hiccup in the thing. And it, if somebody walks by with a rubber ball and does this, and the head follows the rubber ball. So robotics are getting extremely human-like. So the problem, again, with receptivity, your mirror wakes up, gives you some information, you know, try to make you feel good. But if you're not listening, you know, we've got to find how to nudge people into wellness by finding their sweet spots. So the wellness health paradigm is essentially predictive diagnostics. That's what I do as a clinical chemist. Continuous monitoring. And this is a feedback loop in itself, because the monitoring finds something that's an issue and suggests predictive diagnostics, which may or may not be in your home toilet or may be in the hospital. And then evaluation and reporting, and then feeding back through the system again. This is the model in which how the whole system's going to work. So in order to get this kind of information out to the average citizens, I've created a nonprofit called medicalautomation.org. I encourage you to visit the website. If you put medical automation into the Google, you'll drag up either Medical Automation Systems, which is here in Charlottesville, I founded, or medicalautomation.org. So that's the one you want. And so we're a volunteer nonprofit, and we're essentially improving healthcare quality and efficiency through teaching automation principles and their application in health systems. My partner in crime is Terry Scherer, who is the former health science curator for the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. for 40 years. So he has a very well-connected Rolodex, and we hold annual conferences in the D.C. area. This coming year, it'll probably be at Johns Hopkins. It's a way to really get the information out there so people can begin to use it. We also send out a weekly newsletter, which you're welcome to sign up for. Yeah, like that. Yeah. So every week we have about 5 to 7 little short, very short vignettes. You should be able to get through the email in about 20 seconds. But we find that about 75% of people, we've got 10,000 subscribers, 75% of the people find something interesting and go to the website to learn more about that detail. But very similar to kinds of things I've been telling you about today. But you can go to the website and just sign up for Tagline. That's our newsletter, Tagline. So that's my presentation for today.
Yes.
That's right. We're still on podcast here. Yeah. So the question was, what about radiation? Well, they've proven again that cell phones don't harm you from the amount of radiation they give off. But at the same time, they've shown that radiation can alter the growth of cells. So, you know, we're still in the debate area, but it's probably pretty safe. Our system uses extremely low levels of electricity. To give you an idea, a battery in one of those systems lasts for 2 years. So the amount of energy being generated is minimal. The secret to our success is this film called piezoelectric film that if you move it in any way, it sends out a huge electrical signal. So in the floor monitor, we just have a little pin resting on the floor. And it's so sensitive, it could be over in a corner. And if I just do this with my knees, it sends the knee bend signal to us. So it's just very, very, very low sensitive levels of electricity. And so we use that same principle in many different ways to get all of the information we gather. There's probably more in your computer than in... Yes? Yeah, the question was, what's the future of my chart, when it's particularly at UVA? Well, my chart is nationwide, and everybody is frustrated from the fact that it really doesn't give you anything useful except it keeps your appointments and lists a place where you list all your medications and all your, you can go back and review your diagnostics. But you can review the raw data, but there's no trending, there's no nothing under there. Well, everything starts simply, and I think they're trying to find how to get the perfect combination together. I mean, our system at WellAware Systems is far more sophisticated in terms of presenting to yourself how you're sleeping, how you're eating, how you're bathing, and that sort of thing. And in fact, that most people aren't really interested enough to want to learn more that's down there. It exists, but just looking at a color-coded pattern. That's why at the very beginning I showed you that triangle of your balanced life and a score on there. So just with a quick glance in the morning, you'd say, oh, I'm doing fine. You know, or if you have a chronic issue and it's always that square is always out of kilter, in fact, I would probably have it readjust for your issues. So if you have a chronic illness, you'd still be green even though you have this ongoing illness. You've just you're controlling it and you've come to live with it, so you're well balanced. So there's all sorts of interpretations that have to be done. That's why we're going to start in using psychiatrists in what we do, because we really want to understand how to best approach humans and their mind and how they're going to be receptive to these sorts of things. Now, well-aware systems, we made the conscious decision not to go direct to consumer. We were approached by Best Buy, said we want to put it on the shelf tomorrow, and we would have had the same fate as that company I told you about, the bracelet. It just would not have worked perfectly, and it would have been gone. So we teamed up with a couple of faith-based providers, the Evangelical Lutherans and the Volunteers of America, and they are actually deploying them through their 60,000 beds they have on a daily basis. And we have 2,200 systems working today, monitoring people. So that's the first step, and then we hope to be able to go direct to consumer. But the company would probably be bought by Philips or Honeywell, and then it would become available. That's always the challenge with technology. It has to go through some very slow growth steps where it becomes unavailable to everybody. So unfortunately, nothing yet. Hypogen actually, it's a virtual pharmaceutical company, but I'm soon to make that test available through a Richmond lab, I hope. So if I get an exclusive deal with them, then that'll be direct to consumer, and you could have that in the next 6 months. So the trick is, how do you get people to know about these things? Well, that's where we created Tagline. Tagline is a repository for technologies at the cusp of being useful, but as soon as something becomes useful, then we want to use Tagline as a way to get the news out there. And kind of, what is it, and what will it do for me, and approximately how much will it cost? Okay, the first question about urban areas. Well, actually, we deployed 50% of our systems early on in rural health settings because they're the most greatly in need. So we did West Virginia and, again, the hinterlands of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. There's an interesting, the Leona Helmsley Trust has a child that's living in Sioux Falls and has already put $100 million into transforming the Sioux Falls health system. And they, $8 million has gone to well-aware systems to install those systems in ever-broadening rural setting.
Like Wyoming,
Montana, place of one person per mile is the average density. Yeah, that's where it's needed most. And also, elders in those settings have to transition the furthest to a facility, causing a complete disruption of their social network, which is often deathly. So we want to affect care as quickly as we can, and that's the target. We went after the lower 10% of people on purpose. Our system's so affordable, it's about half the cost of a cell phone bill every month, which still is too expensive for a lot of people. But if it's subsidized by, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, because those individuals will be in those systems eventually, if you can forestall that, you more than pay for it. So we're trying. That's what the $8.1 million is meant to do, is to prove to Medicaid, CMMS, Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, that this is affordable to a point that they need to cover it, so that we really do have a healthier population. So we hope they spend their eight, it's the Evangelical Lutherans are setting up this study. We hope they spend their $8 million well enough to be convincing enough that this is the case. But I like going after those who can't afford it. In fact, I wrote a grant recently to some agency, and we did it with the Leesburg Free Clinic because they have a high population up there. We wanted those individuals who couldn't afford health care, so they're going to free clinics. So we want to install the bed sensor, particularly in these homes of the ones who are visiting the free clinic chronically, and see what we can do. Just affect change right there. So stay tuned. Yes?
By what percentage will this decrease the number of medical staff when you need doctor, nurses, et cetera?
Now, the question is, how will this impact the current staffing of medicine? I see not only reducing the need, in the future there aren't going to be enough doctors and nurses to take care of all of us. That's the projection. So one, it'll take care of the need by providing the services we demand as Americans. But what a hidden thing that might happen is it may reduce the costs or what these people earn for a living. I mean, physicians are at the highest end of our paid people beyond the CEOs of companies, and it's not in England. There's a closer match between the skill level and the amount of pay. In the U.S., it's out of balance. So I think if you decrease the demand, you'll reduce the costs, and so we'll level out that playing field as well. Not that I have anything against physicians who can earn whatever they can earn. I just think as a society, we spend far too much for healthcare. I think it's our number one industry. There's something wrong with that. a lot of needless care. Something like 50% of all care is really not necessary. So this would give you the kind of information necessary to find out what's necessary and also get there before you have a problem when it gets not only painful but expensive. Well, they're good questions. Thank you for coming today.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.